Today is in Sefer Chagiga Daf Yotes. We will begin on Daf Yotches Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan. Hanoitel Yodov. If somebody washes his hand, Niskaven, if he had intention to wash his hands, then Daloch is Yodov Tahiris, his hands are considered Tahar. Line Niskaven, but if he didn't have intention, Yodov Tameis, his hands are Tamei. V'chein Amatpel. Similarly, somebody is putting himself or his hands into the mikveh. Here we're talking about the hands, that when we learned in the Mishnah, under certain circumstances, the only way to make the hands tar, as we learned by Kodesh, the halach is you have to be toivel the hands. It's not adequate just to wash the hands. Teaches us the Mishnah, the Braisa, the Kenematbal Yod, if somebody is immersing his hands, the Skaven, if he had Kavona, Yod of Tahiris, his hands are Tahar. When the Skaven, if he didn't have Kavana, Yod of Timaeus. And as the Mepharshim point out, why does the Braisa have to speak both about washing and Tefillah? And they explain, for one may think that if somebody's putting his hands in the mikveh, even if Loin the Skaven, he has absolutely no intention for Tahara, but why would somebody put his hands into the mikveh? It must be, there must be some element of Tahara automatically accomplished. And there, certainly, kavan is not required. Teaches us this braisa, that kavan is always required, even when one is sticking his hands into a mikveh. Ask the Gemara, for Tanya, but we learned in a different braisa. Bein niskaven, bein lo niskaven, whether if one had kavana, or one did not have kavana, yod of tahiris, his hands are always tahar. Answers the Gemara, amar av nachem loy kasha. Kan l'chulin, Kan l'maisa. By chulin, kavana is not required. By maisa, kavana is required. That's how we reconcile these two braises. But as the Chazon Ish teaches us, even though when we learn this Gemara, we learn that for washing, for chulin, we don't have to have any kavana. And again, when we say we don't have to have any kavana, it means you have absolutely no intention. Somebody just washed his hands. When he washed his hands, he had no intention to eat bread. And then right after he washed his hands, he happens to decide that he wants to eat a sandwich. The Gemara is telling us it's tahar. But we know, and we're going to discuss it in Mitzvah Shem in future shiurim, that the concept of Hesach Hadas by Netilas Yadayim. But if Kavan is not required, ask the Chazon Ish, so where do we have Hesach Hadas? Says the Chazon Ish, that when the Gemara says here that we don't have to have Kavana for Netilas Yadayim, that means until up to washing the hands. But from the point when one washes his hands until he dries his hands, which is all part of the process of Netilas Yadayim, even by Chulin, Kavana will be required. Also interesting to note is that the Mishnah Berurah, when he brings this din, tells us that the Halacha is our Gemara, is as our Gemara teaches us, that kavana is not required when washing for chulin, which is all the washing that we do nowadays. Still, he says, l'chatchilu one should have kavana. And let's say somebody washed his hands, and then wants, with no intention to eat, so he didn't have kavana. What should he do in order to be able to wash? So if he wants to wash, he could wash his hands as many times as he wants. If he wants to be able to make a bracha on Tilas Yadayim, what he should do is touch a place on his body which is normally covered, and then certainly he could and should wash his hands again and be able to make a bracha on the Netilas Yadayim. This Gemara is also the basis for a shaila that's very often asked. And it's really a shaila that was asked at the Rajba already. We know that when we buy kalim, we have to have tefillas kalim. The question is, could a guy do tefillas kalim? You buy a big set of dishes. You're running a restaurant or a hotel, and you have a lot of tefillas kalim, and you have someone who helps you who's not Jewish. Is he allowed to do the tefillas kalim? So the Rajba says, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rajba, that just like our Gemara teaches us that you don't have to have kavana from the tefillah, the fact that the person is doing the tefillah doesn't have any intention, as long as you have some sort of hashgacha to make sure he's doing his job properly. He can do the tefillas kalim. The Taz does say that l'chatchila one should have a Jew do the tefillas kalim, but al pidin, it's certainly mutter that a non-Jew could do the tefillas kalim. Ask the Gemara, umenot tamer the chulin lebay kavana. From where do we know that chulin doesn't require kavana? So all the mefarshim ask, obvious. We just quoted a brisa. The braisa that we just read on the bottom of Amud Bey says, Bein Niskaven, Bein Loin Niskaven, Yod of Tahiris, and we interpreted that that braisa is referring to Chulin. So what's the Gemara's question? So I saw a number of answers. One answer is a fairly simple one, that the Gemara is trying to identify that perhaps there's a Mishnah that could prove to us that that Kavan is not required. This is only a Braisa. We always know that a Mishnah is more authoritative than a Braisa, so perhaps we could identify a Mishnah. That's one teretz. Another teretz that I saw is that one could say that this Braisa is referring to a situation where it's not a Tumah d'Oraisa. So since the whole Tumah is the Rabbanon, that's why you don't have to have Kavanah. How do we know that even when we're dealing with a situation of a person who having a Tumah d'Oraisa, if he's just washing for Chulin, Kavanah is not required? So that's why the Gemara looks for another source that could perhaps prove that. Another teretz is that in this case, the Mefarshim want to suggest, the person knew he was sticking his hands into a mikveh. He knew he was washing his hands. He might not have had any kavanah, but the washing was intentional. So since at least the washing was intentional, therefore even though he didn't have kavanah to be metahar yodov, the halach is it's enough. What we're trying to find, as we will see in the cases the Gemara brings, situations where I didn't even have kavanah to wash my hands. Water just happened to reach my hands. Perhaps under those circumstances, that's not enough. Teaches us the Gemara, at least the Gemara tries to find situations that even that is considered adequate for Netilas Yadayim. Quotes the Gemara Mishnah. Mishnah Masechta Mikvos, the Tanan. Gal Shenitlash. You have a wave of water and it just flies out of the yam, out of the sea. Or Bo Aboim So, and it has in it Aboim So, V'nofel Ala Adam, and it hits the person, V'ala Kalim, or Kalim that need to be come Tahar, Tahir, they become Tahar. So to understand this Mishnah, we need to say some words of introduction. When one has to be Tovel himself, he could be Tovel himself either in a mikveh or in a mayon. The Torah discusses both of them. A mikveh has two very important halachas. One is that it has to have memsa, it has to have at least 40 sa, and another halacha is that it has to be stationary. The halacha calls it ashbayrin. We're learning a little hilchos mikvos. It's called ashbayrin. A mayon certainly doesn't have to be stationary. It could be zeichlin. It could be flowing. Regarding the 40 saw, the requirement of having 40 saw, we'll discuss that in a minute. Teaches us this Mishnah, that if you have a wave just flying out of the yam and hits a person who needs tahara, or hits a keli that requires tahara, it becomes tahar. Ktani. So the Mishnah is referring to a case where Adam Dumi the Kalim. The person is like a Kalim. Ma Kalim, just like Kalim, the Loi Mechavni, that don't have any Kavana. Af Adam, the Loi Mechavni. So we see that Kavana is not required as long as the person has this mikveh water or water that brings Tahara. Hit him, it's enough. So the Tzlach asks, why does the Gemara have to use this type of reasoning? That we're going to compare the person to the Keli. Just say, we're obviously dealing with a Keli that needs Tahara. So if the Keli needs Tahara, the Keli was just hit by the water, it didn't have any intention, and we see that it's Tahar. Why does the Gemara have to compare Adam Dumi the Keli? So the Tzlach says two Terutzim, very nice Terutzim. One Terutz is, one could perhaps argue, says the Tzlach, that a keli is different than a person. A keli can't have kavana. A keli can't think. So there, perhaps, the halakha doesn't require kavana. But a person who obviously has the ability to think, perhaps there the halakha requires that one have kavana. That's why the Gemara says, since the Mishnah is comparing Adam to Kalim, Kalim don't require kavana, Adam doesn't require kavana. Another terrace that the Tzlach gives is that a keli can never be so tame that it's on the status of a chiyuv karis. But a person can be tame to the degree of a chiyuv karis. For example, if a woman is a nida, until she becomes tar, there's a chiyuv karis for to have relations with a husband. So perhaps a keli that doesn't get to that high level of tumah you don't have to have kavana. But a person that could come to that high level of tumah, perhaps the halacha requires kavana, teaches us the Gemara. We see that our Mishnah is saying Adam Dumi the Kalim. The Mishnah is comparing a person to a Kali. So if a Kali doesn't require kavana, so too a person doesn't require kavana. Ask the Gemara, Umamai, who tells you to interpret the Mishnah this way? Perhaps the way to interpret the Mishnah is Dimu B'yoyim Shib U'mitzapa Eimasa Yitla Shagalaskinen. It's a stormy day, and the person knows that the wave is coming, and he expects it to come. And same, similarly, the Kalim that are Tomei and have to become Tor is in a situation, the Dumi the Adam, and we know that the Kali has to become Tomei. And Ma Adam the Ba'kavana, the person's waiting for this wave to come and be Matar him. Av Kalim is referring to a situation, the Mechavan Lahu, that he's waiting for the Tahara to come. And there's no proof that Kavana is not required. On the contrary, it could be well interpreted that Kavana is required and Kavana is possible because he knows that the wave is about to come. Now, when we learned Daf Yud Aleph, we had an interesting discussion. We discussed that the Gemara there taught us that when one goes to a mikveh, the Gemara taught us that the minimum shear of a mikveh is mem saw, 40 saw. We at that time discussed is the same halacha applied to a mayon. If somebody's going to a stream, is there a requirement for 40 saw? And if you recall, we quoted a machlokes rishonim over the subject. Say the rishonim that the Ravid says, if our Gemara should be a clear proof that a Mayan requires Memsa. Because what is our Gemara saying? Gal shenitlish, if you have a Gal that's coming from a Mayan, Ubo Abo Emsa. So we have a clear proof to that Machlokes Rishonim. So how will the Rishonim that hold that a Mayan doesn't require Abo Emsa answer this explicit Mishnah? So I saw a number of Terutzim. One teretz is that even if we'll say that a mayan doesn't require a bom saw, we did say that the water has to be able to cover the person. A bom saw is the mount that covers the person. So when the Mishnah here says that it has a bom saw, it's not because there's a requirement that it have a bom saw, like a mikveh have a bom saw. It's a practical point. How do you know that the person is going to be covered from head to toe with water if it has a bom saw? That's one teretz. Another teretz that I saw is that there's a difference between yam and mayon. Mayon is a stream. Yam is like a river. A river doesn't have all of the coolness of a mayon. A mayon taka doesn't require memsa. But here we're talking about a gal shenitlash. It's a gal that comes out from a yam. There, everybody will agree that 40 saw is required. And then a third teretz that I saw, the shach says this teretz, a very nice teretz. He says as follows. If one is going into a mayon to be matar himself, 40 saw is not required. But here we're not dealing with a normal situation of a yam, of a person entering into a mayon, entering into the yam. The wave is coming to you. There, everybody will agree that the 40 saw requirement is there. It's interesting to know, just for a moment, there's an interesting vort from the Tferes Shloima based on this Mishnah. We know that in many places in Shas and in Midrashim, a Talmud Chochem is compared to a Mayon HaMizgaber, to a powerful stream, a powerful river. So it says, what's Pshat? What does the Gemara mean when he compares a Talmud Chochem to a Mayon HaMizgaber? So he says that this Mishnah teaches us this. What is this Mishnah teaching us? Mishnah is teaching us that the water is certainly Matar when it's in the Mayon. It's certainly Matar when it's in the Yam. But we're learning now a chiddush that it has the ability to be matayer even when it's detached from its original source. When it's a wave that's detached from the yam. So is the power of a Talmud Chacham. The power and the influence of a Talmud Chacham is not limited to when you're sitting next to the Talmud Chacham. When you're sitting in the yeshiva or in the Beis Medrash next to the Talmud Chacham. Even when you're separated from Talmud Chacham, you leave the yeshiva, you leave the Beis Medrash, the Talmud Chacham is like this gal, it's like this Mayan HaMizgaber, it's like this wave that has the ability to influence the Talmidim after when they're not physically together. Says the Gemara, V'chi Teima, If we're going to interpret that this Mishnah is referring to a situation of Yoshev Metzaper, that the person is expecting it to hit him, so what's the Mishnah teaching us? Maila Memra. Why shouldn't it be a satisfactory Tahara? Answers the Gemara. Sal Kedat Chamina. One could perhaps argue that a wave hitting a person should never be an acceptable mode of Tahara. Why? Because Ligzadim Asl Midbil Bechadul Shal Gishamim. The halacha is that if we have rainwater on an incline, even one should not, in a pool of water on an incline, he could not go into that and consider himself as he went into the mikvah. Why? For two reasons, Rashi says. One reason Rashi says is that when water is on an incline, it's not considered as if it's all in one mass, in one unit of Abam Saw. And as we said a couple of moments ago, for a mikvah to be effective, we have to have 40 saw together. Another reason why Chadlus is not considered a kosher mikvah, because since it's an incline, it's more similar to Zeichlin, flowing water. And as we said before, a mikvah is not kosher. If it's Zeichlin, it always has to be an Eshbarim. So I would say that this wave that's coming is similar to a Chadlus. And perhaps therefore Chazal should say that even if the person intended that the wave should hit him, it should not be an effective Tahara. Inami, Nigzer Roshan, Atakipin. Even if a wave is effective, the wave is only effective on the head of the wave that hits the person. The water that's in the arch, so to speak, flying in the sky, is not effective. And the reason the Rishonim explain, because there is no concept of a mikveh that's not in a specific spot. It's not on the earth. Mikveh in the air is not considered on something, and since it's not resting on something, it's not an effective mikveh. So perhaps the Mishnah, perhaps one would argue that since the arch of the wave doesn't affect Tahara, even the head of the wave, we should not allow it to affect Tahara. That's Kamashmalon, what the Mishnah is teaching us, that it is an effective Tahara. But it has nothing to do with the Shaila, if Kavana is or is not required, because the Mishnah could easily be interpreted to a situation where the person had Kavana to become Tahar. It's interesting to note that the Stipler says that this Mishnah is the basis for an interesting halacha. Not very relevant halacha l'maisa, but it's interesting Shaila. The Shulchan Aruch says as follows. We all know that the 40 saw of mikvah water are not allowed to be mayim shuvim. You can't take water in a pail and pour it into the mikvah. That's mayim shuvim. What's the halacha on snow? Let's say there's no water. Let's say this shaila has come up many times in the history of Klai Yisrael. Somebody has to construct the mikvah. He doesn't have the ability to construct the mikvah. So you can't use mayim shuvim. So the halacha is you can bring snow. The Shulchan Aruch clearly says that snow is not considered mayim shuvim. So you have pure snow. You have to know it's pure snow. You could bring it and you won't have mayim shuvim. But now the shaila is, it's not necessarily very appetizing, because could somebody go into a mikveh that's all snow? You filled up a tub with snow, and before it melts, can you use it?
We put a
keli. Put the snow into a keli and not tie yourself in the snow. Right. Or could you immerse a keli? Right. That's much more practical, Shaila. Right. So the Beis Yosef already discusses the Shaila, and he quotes Rishonim that say that that's not acceptable. And he quotes this Mishnah as being the reason, this Mishnah about the keeping not being acceptable. And nobody understands the connection between this halacha that you can't toivel yourself in a keepin in the arch. What does that have to do why you can't toivel yourself in snow? So the Stipler says an interesting explanation. He says, water, when you have a pool of water, so that's one unit, whatever amount of water, 40 so, whatever amount of water you have, that's considered one unit of water. When you have snow, it's not considered like you have one unit of snow. Each snowflake is considered a separate entity with one on top of the other. So if you have a pile of snow, It's not like it's one pile resting on the ground. It's one piece of snow on top of another piece of snow on top of another piece of snow. And our Mishnah just taught us, that we just learned, keeping something that's on the sky is not an acceptable place that you could do tahara. It has to be on the ground. That's why a pile of snow is like keeping and is not acceptable to be used as a mikveh. So the Gemara is still looking for a source before we go further. In another time, I had the Gemara just quotes the Lama Matpilim the Kippim, that you can't tovel yourself in the arch. The Tanya Matpilim the Roshin, we are only allowed to be tovel with the head of the wave. They Matpilim the Kippim, we can't be tovel in the arch. Lefi Sheim Matpilim by Avir, and the Kippim is considered in the air. So where do we know that for Chulin intention is not required? El Maha, the Tanan, there's another Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Perish Naflu Toicha Mas HaMayim, if fruit fell into a pool of water, Upashimish Yod of Tameis, and somebody happens to have his hands Tamei, and he sticks his hands into this pool, V'Natlan, to take out this fruit, the Aloch is Yod of Tairis, because we see that his hands were in the pool of water. And even though no intention for Taharu was there, it's still Tahar. Or Peiris, and Bechiyuta. We've many times spoken about the halacha of Hechshel Mekabel Tumah. A food cannot be susceptible to Mekabel Tumah unless it became first wet, it first became moist, one of the seven mashkin. Yad, Shachat, Dam. Yayin, Devash, Shemen, Cholov, Tal, Dam, Mayim. Those are the seven liquids that could be machshir, that can make a food susceptible to tumah. But there's another halacha. The Torah uses the word kiyitein mayim, that when water is put on these foods. But there's a difference how you pronounce the word. Do we follow the word, the pronunciation, the kri, which says kiyitein, that the person has to specifically put the water on the food with the intention that it should be mukshir lekabel tumah? Or do we read it kiyutan? As long as the water, as long as one of these liquids is put on the food, even if there was no intention to cause hechsher, it's already mukshir. So the halacha views it as some sort of a compromise. You don't have to have specific intention to be machsher the food, but you have to be satisfied that the food became wet. So in this case, where the person put his hands into the water with no intention of getting his hands wet, and no intention of getting the food wet, that food is not mukhsh lekabel tumah. We also see a very interesting concept, the Paiskim say. When we discuss hechsh lekabel tumah, there's another shayla in the Paiskim. Can I be machsher someone else's food? That means your food is here, and I make it wet, and let's even discuss a situation where I did it with full intent, but it's not my food. Can I be machsher your food? From here they want to bring a raya that I can be machshir your food. Because here we're talking about payers that are not necessarily my payers. Yet we see that there is a discussion that I can or can't be machshir them. So the fact, hachshara is not a din in the owners of the food. Hachshara is a din if the person applying the moisture, the liquid, to the food intends to have it become wet, it's already mukshir. However, continues this Mishnah. V'mishvil shiyiduch yadav. But if his intention was that his hand should just be washed, so here I already have real intent. So again, Yad of Tahiris, certainly my hands are tar. But here, v'aperis hayim b'chuyutan. Here, the Paris become mukshar. Why? Because I had intent. So the question that Rashi alludes to, and many Rishonim discuss, is I only intended to get my hands wet. I didn't intend to get the food wet. It just was a byproduct of my hands getting wet. Why is that considered that I had any level of intent? Even if we just explained that we don't have to have a deep degree of intent. So the Rishonim answer as follows. The Rishonim say, when we, as we explained a moment ago, the level of intent to make a food, mukshel kabel tumah, is not a very deep level. It's not something that you have to have a l'shem yichud, that you have to have a real intent. As long as there's a level of satisfaction with things getting wet here, that's already considered intent. Here, I wanted my hands to get wet. That's already considered that I'm satisfied and the food will become mosher. But here we see clearly that even when I didn't intend to be matar on my hands, the first part of this Mishnah taught us that my hands do become tar. Ask the Gemara, Eisvei Rav or Rav Nachman, from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, HaToivel Chulin, if somebody went and was toivel himself, with the intent that he should be able to eat Chulin. V'hochsek L'chulin, Os L'maisa. But what do we see here? We learned in the Mishnah, we'll discuss it more, you have to have intent for every level of Kedusha. And if you only had intent for a lower level, it won't work for a higher level. But here we see that for every level, even for Chulun, Huchsuk in, only if you had intent is there going to be a Tahara. Loi Huchsuk, just because you washed yourself, Loi. Says, well, that's not the way to understand the Mishnah. Hachikama. After Bisha Huchsuk L'Chulun, even though you had intent for Chulun, Os L'maisa. But for Chulun, you don't have to have intent at all. Eisvei, from another question. It said in our Mishnah, Tavav loy huchsuk, if somebody went to the mikveh with no intent at all, it's kilo loy tavav. It's as if he had no, as if he didn't do any tefillah. My laugh, kilo loy tavav klal. So we see that you have to have intent for any level, not like we're learning our entire shiur so far today, that intent for chulin is not required. Says the Gemara loy. Kilo loy tavav lemaisa. For Maisa, intent is required. Avol, Tavol Chulin. For Chulin, even though no intent was there, he will be considered Tav. Says the Gemara makes a comment. Who suffer, Docher Kamatchilei? The Gemara just asked two questions that our Mishnah seems to indicate that intent is required for Chulin, different than what we've been learning. And the Gemara said Terutzim. But he thought that those Terutzim really weren't great terutzim. They were just said forced. So, however, who saw v'doch kamatchalei? However, nofak doch v'ashkach. Then he went and he found an explicit brisa. The Tanya, the brisa tells us explicitly, tovav aloi huchsuk. If somebody was tovav without any intention, osla maisa, correct, for maisa intention is required, and if he had no intention, it's not acceptable. However, umutal l'chulin. Says, so we see, before we start the next Gemara, that here we have a clear brisa corroborating what we've been learning, that for chulin, intent is not required, there is tahara. Our Rebbe Elazar tells us Rebbe Elazar a new din. Tava va'ola, if somebody went to the mikveh, and then he came out, machzik atzmei l'chol ma'ashiyutza. He still has an opportunity to make a decision that he has intent for whatever level of kedusha, and it will be effective. So when we learn this line of Rebbe Elazar, it's immediately very difficult to understand. The Mishnah clearly tells us, Tavol v'loi huchsuk, if somebody went to the mikveh without any intention, it's kilo loi tavol. So why does Rebbe Elazar say here that if he went to the mikveh, he could still have intent? Isn't it direct in contradiction to what the Mishnah taught us? So Tysus is really bothered with the question. He doesn't say it in a question-answer form, but Tysus answers, the Rebbe Elazar is referring to a situation where the person is still wet from having gone into the mikveh. If a person is still wet from going into the mikveh, that's not what the Mishnah is referring to. That's still considered like he's still in the middle of going to the mikveh, and that's why he could still have intent, and it should be an effective intent. That's what Tosfos learns. Others learn differently. When the Mishnah says, Tavol v'loi huchsuk, kilo loi tavol, is referring to a situation where a person went to the mikveh with the intent to do tahara. But he had no intent. He didn't have any intention. He knows he's going to the mikveh, but he doesn't know why he's going. Under that circumstances, it's too late once you walk out of the mikveh. But Rebbe Elazar is referring to a situation where a person went in just to wash himself. And then afterwards, he wants to be matar himself. Since he has the proper intention, it's effective. Ask the Gemara, Meisvei, it says in another brisa, Odeyu regla achs b'mayim, if one foot is still in the water, huchsuk l'davakal, even though when he was immersing himself, he only had intent for low-level kedusha, machzik atzmei l'davachomer, he could still have intent for high-level kedusha. Ola, however, once the person emerges from the mikveh, shaveinu machzik, he can't be machzor himself at all. My laugh and a machzor klal. So here we see different than Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is saying, even if we take Tosfos' interpretation, that if the person leaves the mikvah, as long as he's still wet, he can have intent. And here it says that as long as the person can only have intent as long as he's somewhat in the mikvah. If he completely leaves the mikvah, it's too late. Says the Gemara Loi. That's not the way to understand what this brisa says. A day who, if he was still in the mikvah, afa pisha huchsik, even though when he went into the mikvah, he had, let's say, a mind for a lower level of kedusha. He had a mind only, let's say, for chulin. He only had a mind for meiser. But he had intent. There, since he's still in the mikvah, machzik, he could still change his mind to a higher level. Allah, but once he leaves the mikvah, if he was in the mikvah, and when he was in the mikvah, he had intent, so when he leaves the mikvah, he can't change his mind, even if he's wet. But if when he was in the mikvah, he had no intentions at all, imloy huchzik, if he had no intentions at all when he was in the mikvah, when he leaves the mikvah, machzik, he could have intent. Allah, imloy huchzik, machzik, if when he was in the mikvah he had no intention, now he could still have intention, then huchzik ain't a machzik. But if he had intent, just now he's out of the mikvah, even though he's still wet, it's too late to start changing your mind. But now we learned a very interesting din, which the Gemara is going to focus on. The Gemara is going to says that we're learning now that if a person's in the mikvah, when he was in the mikvah, he had specific intent for one level of Kedusha, as long as one foot, and now he's leaving the mikvah, and he's walking out of the mikvah, and he says, you know, I learned the Daf Yomi, and from the Daf Yomi we learned that it pays to have in mind the highest level of Kedusha, because in the highest level of Kedusha, it subsumed all the other levels. But if I have in mind the lower level, it won't help me for a higher level, but he doesn't want to have to go back into the mikvah. So the Mishnah teaches us, the Braisa teaches us, as long as part of his body, his foot, was still in the mikvah, he could still have that intent. So ask the Gemara, man tana, a day regal achs b'mayim. Who's the tana that says as long as one foot is still in the water, it's enough? Amar Rapidas, teaches us Rapidas, Rabbi Yehudahi. It's going according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanan, there's a Mishnah Masechta Mikvahs Perek Zayin. Mishnah says like this, mikvah shenimdat v'yesh by abaram saw mechuvanus. We have a mikvah that has exactly 40 saw, which as we discussed already in today's shir, is the minimum shir of a mikvah. The yodishnaim, and two people walk into this mikvah, the tavl zachazah. First one person immerses himself, he walks out, and then the second person goes in. The aloch is, harishin tahor, the first person is tahor, because he went into a kosher mikvah. But obviously, when one goes into a pool of water, and he leaves the pool of water, he takes along with himself some of the water that's adhering to his body. So now when the second person enters this pool of water, there's no more abam saw. And that's why Hasheni is tamei. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, however, comments Rabbi Yehuda, im ha yiraglav shel rishon noiges b'mayim, there is a way where the first person went into the mikvah, left the mikvah, and yet will not disqualify the mikvah. And that is if part of his body is still in the mikvah. Because why? Because the halacha teaches us a concept of good achas. Good achas says that since his foot is still in the mikvah, all of the water that's on his body is as if it's connected to the mikvah. So we say the same concept here of good achas. That if the person went to the mikvah and only had intention for a lower level of kedusha, but he didn't completely leave the mikvah, he still has a foot in the mikvah, he still has some connection to the water, that connects him to the water that he could still change his mind, and he could still have a higher level of Kedusha. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabbi Baravua, comments of Nachman Rabbi Baravua, Machloikis, the Machloikis of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbonin, if we say good achas, or we don't say good achas, is only b'mailas the Rabbonin. When somebody's toivel himself, because he's required to toivel himself only with Rabbanan. Avel metumel tahara. If somebody has a situation of tumel tahara, divrei hakol, there even Rabbi Yehuda will agree, Hasheni tamei. That that we don't say good achas. V'hainan to Radas. And that's exactly what Rav Das said. Rav Das is telling us that this person who went to the mikveh with the lower level of intent, so this whole din is only with Rabbanim, because as we learned yesterday when we learned the Mishnah, with the Rice you don't have to have any intent when you go to the mikveh. With the Rice all you have to do is go to the mikveh. This whole din is the Rabbanim, yet tells us Rav Das that we apply the concept of good achas, but when do we apply the concept of good achas? Only by the Rabbanim. If it will be a situation of a Daraisa, we can't apply good achas. Ikadamri, however, there's a different version. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, Machloikis, the Machloikis between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. If there is a concept of good achas or not, is only mitumala tahara, when there's a situation where one has to become tar midaraisa, ava b'malas d'rabbanon, when the question at hand is a shayla of a d'rabbanon, divrei hakol, even the chacham will agree, hasheni tar. If that's the case, that the chachamim, at least in a d'rabbanon digger situation, subscribe to the concept of good achas, so that in our case, where the person still has a foot in the mikveh, and the entire requirement for intent is only midrabbanan, even the chachamim will agree that the person could change his mind. So when Rav Das says that this halacha of a dayu b'mayim, that he still has to be in the water and could change his mind, it isn't limited to the shita of the Rabbi Yehuda. Even the chachamim could agree to it. And then Rav Das won't work, because Rav Das says that only Rabbi Yehuda says it. It's not only Rabbi Yehuda, the chachamim could well agree. Pligid Rav Das. So now we learned the concept of good achas. What does good achas teach us? That to apply to our case, the person is leaving the mikveh, he has water on his body, and good achas says that all of the water that's on his body, we look as it flows down. Achas means to go down. Nachas, to go down. As if all the water on his body is still flowing down and is still in the mikveh. But now the Gemara asks a different question. Is there also a concept of good asik? That we look at as if all the mikveh water is going up. Ask the Gemara. And the way the Gemara frames the question is this way. Amu'ula. Baimnei Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yehuda. They asked Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ma'u lahatbil machtin v'tzinoiris v'roisha shel rishon. A person goes to the mikveh. And he has a very fundamental problem. It's very hard to put needles. Again, as we learned, in those days, every utensil had to be tar. They lived in a world of tum and tahara. So if the person put these little needles on his head, could we say good asik as if the water of the mikveh is going, and he's still in the mikveh and he immersed himself as if the mikveh water is on top of his head, and therefore those kalim will become tar. Ma'u lahatul machtim v'tzinaris barosh shorishin. Do we say good asik? Good achas is like Rabbi Yehuda, that the water goes down. However, good asik, to schlep the water up, less late, that he doesn't subscribe to. Idilm, good asik, nami is late. He does apply the concept of good asik. Amalei, so he answered, Tenesua, it's a brisa. The brisa says, Sholosh gamamiris b'nachal. Let's say we have three pools of water. Halyoina, hatachtoina, femtsoz. An upper one, a lower one, and a middle one. Halyoina, vatachtoina, in the upper pool and in the lower pool, shall esrim esrim saw. There's only 20 saw. And as we said, 20 saw is not enough. We need 40 saw. However, the emtsoz, the one between these two 20 saw mikvahs, has a bomb saw. Does have the required shear, and there's a chadal shel gishamim. There's a line of water that's connecting the middle one, ayveres beinayim, connecting the middle one to the upper and lower. So to connect from the middle to the bottom is a situation of good achas. To connect from the middle to the top is a situation of good asik. What do we say? Rabbi Yehuda Omer says, Rabbi Yehuda, meir haya Omer mat bilbal yoina. Not only can we toivel in the lower one, which is relying on good achas, we could even rely on good asik and go into the upper mikveh. And this is the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Taisa doesn't necessarily learn this way, but we're going to learn with Rashi. From here we seem to see that Rabbi Yehuda is quoting Rameya's Shita. Rabbi Yehuda's probably agreeing with Rameya. So if Rameya says that we say good Asik, it must be that Rabbi Yehuda also agrees that we say good Asik. Vatanya asked the Gemara, how can we say that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds? Rabbi Yehuda Aymer, there's another bright that says, Rabbi Yehuda says, Meir Haya Aymer, Matal Bel Yoina. Rameya holds that we could go to the upper one because we say good Asik. Vani Aymer, however, I Rabbi Yehuda holds, but Tachtoin of Loy Bel Yoina, we only say good Achsis, but not good Asik. So Amal Hesi says, Itanya Tanya. Obviously, we misinterpreted what Rabbi Yehuda meant on Amr Aleph. We interpreted Amr Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda was quoting Rameya and agreeing with Rameya. But actually, Rabbi Yehuda is quoting Rameya and not agreeing with Rameya, because Rabbi Yehuda personally only subscribes to good Achis and not good Asik. And Rameya subscribes both to good Achis and good Asik. So it turns out our Shaila, the Gemara Shaila, do we say good Achis or good Asik? Do we say good Asik as Machlokes, Rameya and Rabbi Yehuda?
Why is he holding on his head?
Hefsek is only an outside thing. What? Your hair is already tahor. You already immersed yourself. You're right. If you wanted to make your head tahor, you have to first go down and then put the needles on. Good point.